call a meeting to order this constitutionary committee. This is, let's see, is it 25th? 25 March 1981. The quorum is present. Mr. O'Connell was here just a moment ago. I guess he'll be back. The quorum is now present except for Mr. Miller and Mr. O'Connell. First, I'd like to introduce to the committee Michael Ford, who's right back here, who will be counsel to the committee, or actually is overlapping with Mr. Froelich. So for a short period of time, we're going to have two attorneys working for the committee, Mr. Ford will be with us for the rest of the session until the end of the session. So I guess we'll get overkill for numbers of lawyers we have around here. We have before the committee House Bill number 337, an act authorizing reimbursement for attorney's fees incurred by individuals in connection with state administrative actions. For the record, we've been joined by Mr. O'Connell. Mr. O'Connell is Mr. Ford, who will be counsel of the committee, and both he and Mr. Froelich will be with us until sometime in early April, and Mr. Froelich's contract will be over at that time, and Mr. Ford will be continued. This is by Mr. Malone and Mr. Kearney. Mr. Malone is here. Why don't you join us? You need to meet, join us at the very end of the table because, of course, it's set up for your meeting at 5. And offer your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hugh Malone, representative from House District 13, and I appreciate the opportunity to address the Judiciary Committee on House Bill 337. Speaker, the idea, of course, behind House Bill 337 would provide for a mechanism for reimbursement to members of the public for attorney's fees that they have to pay an attorney in connection with administrative actions of state government if the result of the action is defined in the favor of the member of the public that hired the attorney. It's a basic idea behind it, and it provides for a presentation of those sorts of attorney's fees and limits to a maximum of $5,000. Provides the person, if they weren't satisfied with their settlement there, they could go to court. Since the bill was introduced, some items have come to my attention that the bill doesn't really address, and that is, suppose that the whole argument or disagreement arises from some mistake on the part of the individual. Then, after the person hires an attorney and so forth, they found out that the person submitted the wrong information to begin with. It wasn't the state's fault that the whole thing happened. It was the other person's fault. Should you reimburse them for attorney's fees in that kind of a case? And that isn't really the intent of the bill. There's also areas where it's kind of hard to figure out. Maybe both sides are in error, and maybe in that case only a portion of the attorney's fees within the limit should be allowed. I don't have any recommendations on that, except that I don't think that if a person, say, made an incorrect application for a permit or something and that were turned down because they hadn't submitted the right information, they hire an attorney. And then the attorney finds out that the original application was submitted incorrectly, prepares a correct one, submits it, it's approved. Why should the state have to pay the person's attorney fees because the person wasn't complying with what they're supposed to do? Generally, the reason behind the bill is because the increasing importance of administrative law and the complexity of it, scope of it, that more and more people are having to resort to professional legal counsel to resolve questions. If that sort of expertise is going to be necessary, then I think at least in the case where the person was right to begin with, they shouldn't have to bear the cost of that out of their own pocket. They should be reimbursed for it to some degree. Mr. Speaker.
Chairman.
Or Mr. Chairman.
I tried for that.
Mr. Chairman, you told us it's pretty hard to come up with it. I don't think there is a fiscal on the legislation. I understand it's hard to come up with it because of all the different state agencies that are would be affected by it, would each basically have to prepare their own fiscal load on it.
Apparently other members have additional materials in the file that I do not have. I don't know how that happened.
I read this wrong. I think it's 84,000.
Really? Do you know something here?
Should be in there.
Just for tax year. Just skim it. Based on the four down. It doesn't really.
There is a memorandum from the this is from the Department of Revenue, and how to come up with what the cost would be. I don't have any really good idea on that except to ask for estimates from the individual departments. There's some other issues addressed in the Department of Revenue's papers that touch on the matter.
Other questions on the members of the committee? Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chuckwuck, then Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have an idea how we would have done before?
How what?
The attorney's reimbursed.
Well, I don't think they are unless you go into court proceeding. The court has the authority to award attorney's fees. Mechanism for doing it, but short of that, I don't think that right now they're reimbursed. I know one particular case, for example, there's a lot of it happened in my district where a person was cited for an offense under regulation. Had to go to the trouble of engaging an attorney and bringing arguments to the state that, in fact, the regulation exceeded the authority of the law. Mm-hmm. And the state agreed with that. And when they did, the citation was dropped. But in the meantime, the person was out of hundreds of dollars. You can keep that up till people are just harassed into the courthouse. And I don't think that's good public policy to have a situation that allows it to happen. I'm not saying that is what the managers of state government are doing, but unfortunately people get caught in circumstances that nobody intended to be in, and that's going on now.
Mr. Anderson.
Claims are according to the bill, claims are authorized for administrative action, investigation, or inquiry conducted by the state. What language in here?
What page and what number?
I'm referring to page 14, line 14. What language in here precludes a person from filing for reimbursement in a criminal case, criminal charge, as placed against him in which he wins the court action?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Malone.
Yeah, I think that maybe it's not clear the way the language is written on line 14, page 1, that it's intended that the word administrative actually would modify whether the action, the investigation, or inquiry. Maybe it needs to be clarified. It's not the intent.
Mr. Anderson, anything further?
No, that's my only question about it. I don't have any particular problem with it, but if there's a potential here for people who are charged with criminal acts come in and ask for reimbursement, then of course you know the state will be inundated by thousands and thousands of these claims.
I'm glad you're opposed to the bill, the other bill on that subject that does that before the committee that I did not plan to bring up, Mr. Fox.
Well, if there is such a bill, I'll be opposed to it. You can
there is.
Specific response to Representative Anderson, I think the definition pretty clearly forecloses litigation as being an activity that can get compensation for. And I guess this sort of raises the question I have, or the concern I have about the bill, which I very briefly talked about with Representative Malone. As I understand, the thrust of the bill is when there is an informal investigation of some sort of a person that requires that person to go to some effort to respond to the bureaucracy, that's the stage at which the bill is proposing compensation. Is that what we're talking about? I mean, we foreclose or exclude litigation and formal administrative hearings. So I assume we just mean informal contacts.
Well, it depends, Mr. Chairman. Depends, I guess, on what you mean by informal contact. A citation, I guess, is a formal contact. But it might not come to a formal hearing.
Let me just, if I may, cite a couple of examples to see what the intent is and what the bill would do. Let's say the area of public assistance, which is people not likely to end up hiring lawyers for that, so they're not likely to incur the cost. But a person, a welfare worker, believes that there is an eligibility question with a welfare recipient, contacts that welfare recipient, raises the issue. No formal proceeding is being initiated to terminate the recipient. It's just a question of eligibility. Or a question of eligibility for the permanent fund dividend, or any one of a number of programs where there is, in effect, an informal investigation of eligibility. If the person responds to that by hiring an attorney to resolve that question, is your intent to provide reimbursement for that attorney if the question is ultimately resolved in the person's favor?
Mr. Wall? Generally, yes. There is the issue in there that suppose that the person, let's say it was a permanent fund dividend, incorrectly makes application, doesn't put down the required information. Well, I guess I'm saying where the administrative agency, where it's through their mistake, oversight, or action, and end up incurring this cost, then I think, yes, the reimbursement. Where the person is just individual has hired the attorney, so you might say, well, hasn't done things right, that doesn't seem sensible to be reimbursed.
Fox might just realize that I have a bill up right now.
Finish the thought. And your intent is not to provide reimbursement. The point that permanent fund dividend investigation becomes a formal administrative charge.
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't have any objection to doing that. I think if you do that, though, consistent with the intent of the bill, from my point of view, you got a limit, some sort of limit. The real idea is to give somebody, you know, an ordinary person that doesn't do these things in the course of their regular business and runs up against the red tape of state government and suddenly finds themselves out of pocket, maybe $2,000, a chance to survive. It's not necessarily the intent to
I don't believe, except there may be some specific statute, except for that, I don't believe there's a general rule of providing reimbursement to the winning side in a formal administrative proceeding.
As far as I know, you're correct.
There is a provision, of course, with regard to litigation where the court rule, two court rules that provide you recover attorney's fees if you're the prevailing party in litigation against any of them, not just the state. So what the system we would set up if this bill were to pass would be get your attorney paid for if there's an informal action. But once that informal action moves into a formal charge, a formal administrative charge of some sort, and you defend that, you don't get that paid if you win. But then if it's appealed into the court and you prevail again in court, you can get it reimbursed there. It doesn't seem to be consistent to pay at the beginning and at the end and not in the middle.
I think I agree with you on that. It depends on how far you want to expand the scope of the bill and the definition section. I suppose you could delete the exemption of foreign administrative hearings. Since there are provisions for awards caused by the court, I don't see any reason.
Yes, if I can continue with this line, I guess I would be inclined to be very concerned about the breadth of the authority given, power given under this bill, because there are almost an infinite number of ways in which people will come in contact with their government. And I guess my concern would be that some of those, I guess in my view, the bottom line is I don't think some of them justify sure that it's good public policy to, in fact, reimburse people who want to fly into lawyers' offices to defend those actions. I am inclined the other direction, which is to not provide reimbursement at this preliminary stage for again, the infinite numbers of types of contacts you have, and instead maybe provide some sort of reimbursement once it gets to the point of a formal administrative proceeding where there's a formal charge. There's a potential for substantial loss of economic loss or loss of a privilege, a license, a permit, a dividend, a welfare check. The point that there is a formal charge being made of some sort administratively, I think that the good public policy does trigger some sort of right in the person to be reimbursed for the cases where the state's wrong. First step, such a broad step, I understand why they don't think they can come up with this system. Every agency, every day, has numerous contacts of that sort.
Just one response to that. Then, you know, I can understand your reasoning, Mr. Chairman. The only thing to say about it is that, what do you do about the case where I don't know about charges. A lot of times what's really going on is people are being denied some activity, something they can't do or can't get, whatever it happens to be. Charges are involved exactly, but I think that's what's really going on. The freedom of action is something limited. What do you do about the case then where you know, they run up against a brick wall and finally they say, well, legal counsel persuades the administrative agency that they made some sort of mistake and they're not handling it right, and the person gets relief. Okay. And they're also on the pocket. So I don't know.
I guess my reaction to that is that. About it. It seems to me that those kind of contacts are sort of part of the social contract. It's part of what you buy into when you buy into being part of a government, part of a society, that the government is going to impact you. We're going to adopt rights of privacy, and we're going to adopt rights to sue the state for abusive actions. And it seems to me beyond that, that that's part of the trade-off you get for being a part of a society. Let me give you another example. I just thought it would be very difficult to determine. So a fire marshal calls you up and says, I'm going to come down and inspect your warehouse for houses for fire code violations. Guy freaks out, hires his lawyer, who comes down there and spends 6 hours walking around with a fire marshal. Fire marshal says, great, no violations. That means the claimant has prevailed. The attorney, in my view, was not necessary to that proceeding, and yet the state has to pay for it.
Did you raise your hand?
Well, going back to what Representative Brown was saying, I believe that there probably are situations where people are finding it difficult to deal with bureaucracy, and it costs them money and so forth to hire their own legal counsel. But isn't there another alternative? Doesn't the state government already have a place for that person to go? That person who is refused the service or whatever, he can go to the ombudsman, state ombudsman, he can get relief there. He can get relief perhaps through the Alaska Legal Services or, something of that sort. Maybe he can't, but I'm basically opposed to the idea of, if we have problems in state government and the bureaucracy and the people that work within it are doing these things to cause people all this much problem, then we ought to do something about that on the front end. Let's get the people to do the job right instead of coming along later now and saying, we got the wrong people in there and they're putting upon the public and they're not doing the job that they're there to do, so we're going to go ahead and provide them legal counsel or at least refund their legal expenses.
Senator O'Connell?
Thank you. I sort of appreciate what you were saying, Mr. Clarkson, but I'd like to throw out another example, maybe. I suppose it's impossible to come up with any kind of figures on how many cases there are where a frustrated citizen has been approached by some regulatory official or another, and has said you're out of line in this or that capacity. And rather than fight it, they tend to knuckle under, in the opening round and conform, not knowing whether they would have needed to or not, because they didn't want to hassle with it, they didn't want to go to an attorney, they didn't, and that is a distinct advantage that the bureaucracy has. It's the perception of unlimited resources of the government up against Joe Schmuck, that just doesn't know whether to turn around or sit down or what. And I suspect that this bill is designed to try to give that person one little ounce of support,
But if I can respond to that, I think that perception is very likely true in many cases. But I think it's true at that second stage we're talking about, the formal administrative proceeding. The people I have talked to who have suffered that sort of feeling of hopelessness is they go through the process of saying, well, look, they're investigating me now, they're going to try to take my license away, or they're going to try to fine me or something, which is a formal proceeding. And the person says, if they do that, I don't have a chance. I'm going to bring all those lawyers in, I'm going to have a hearing, I'm going to have to hire a lawyer, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's that stage, I would argue, where you ought to be able to beat that person up and say, go on in there and fight it out. You're right, if you win, we'll reimburse you. But it's not at that first stage. I'm convinced it's the second stage where they actually take a formal action to do something to you. In the fire inspection situation, it's when they try to close your building and you ask for a hearing. That's a formal adjudicatory proceeding. At that point, I think so.
Again, at the risk of debating it, but I maintain that most people won't ask for that formal hearing. because they don't even know they have a right to it. And the inspector or whoever it is that is proceeding, you know, on behalf of the state, I'm going to make an assumption. Maybe it's risky, but I don't think so. He knows what the procedures are, and he also knows that this poor citizen probably does not, you know. That's the whole basis that he's operating from. And that's why I say it's difficult to substantiate how many people are going to get railroaded or overrun or steamrolled or whatever without ever even, you know, coming into their mind that it could go to a formal hearing. And the state is going to win, in other words, a substantial number of those issues, and apparently, according to what's in here, in the tax thing at least, 25% of them do go to litigation are ultimately in favor of the citizen rather than the government. Only wins 3/4 of the time. Those are the ones that the government knows that it's got a good chance of winning. What about all the ones where they pulled the total bluff?
Let me just make my anti-lawyer argument as well. I don't think that it's good public policy to get lawyers into everyday relationship with people with their government or people with their grocery store or anything else. And I'm concerned about that too. Representative Dunn.
Chairman, providing for cause as a result of a formal administrative hearing, I think that definitely would be helped. The approach that Bill takes is to try to encourage whatever mechanisms that exist to settle things short of that. And I don't suspect that anybody, for the fun of it, is going to go hire an attorney and go request a formal administrative hearing. It's not fun. But to the extent that only reimbursement only is possible at that stage, it might have the effect of providing incentives for people to do just that now. But I agree that providing reimbursement costs if the person prevails at the hearing or part of the cost or something would be a lot better than nothing at all.
According to this position paper from the Department of Revenue, they said they'll have about 850 cases at that way, and at $2,500 per case, it's a little over $2 million. Excuse me. Their figures last time.
You remember what I mean?
Okay, they had 600 informal administrative appeals each year, and then if the permanent fund dividend program survives the court, they expect another 250, which would make a grand total of 850 per year. And if you go further down, the taxpayers will incur $2,500 in attorney fees. What I've done is took $2,500 multiplied by 850, tables over $2 million. Hugh, I want to ask you a question that I think the department brings up a good point. And that's on page one, the first item. What if there's other than attorney's fees involved, CPA or engineer? You know, I can see that point of view. If a person is trying to prove that he's right, he might have to hire other people other than an attorney to prove his point. I mean, were you intentionally leaving the attorney and excluding other people, or did you overlook this? Or
sure. Well, I think that whether it's passing on a regulation or the application, probably most of the time you're arguing about points in administrative law. It just seems logical to cover the attorneys. If an approach is adopted, such as the chairman and said was his idea, then perhaps you might want to include these, you know, other types of costs that I think they're really important.
Yeah.
The traditional, if I can just say, the traditional formula in
legal, judicial proceedings is costs and fees, costs and attorney's fees.
So if a person needs a CPA, and then attorney's fees plus cost, and would that be applied in this bill here?
No. We're just talking about judicial proceedings.
Right.
Costs usually are recognized.
So we, you know, if we want to include these other professionals, then we have to amend, you know, where the state attorney's fees plus cost, right? I mean, that would be the...
Mr. Chairman, you know, this bill, I think, in a lot of ways presupposes that people working for state agencies are, you know, making a lot of mistakes and making poor judgment and errors in what they're doing. I think that's wrong. I think we ought to be assuming that they, it's just the opposite of that. You know, we have some very dedicated people in state government, and they do a good job. And I don't like the idea that this bill is sort of saying that they're not doing a good job, and we have to protect the public from these public employees. The other thing is, I don't think there's any way of determining, at least it hasn't been shown here, just what the scope and magnitude of this is. This bill, I think, has some very far-reaching ramifications, far beyond anything that's been said at this table. I think before we go ahead with a bill of this sort, we ought to have as much information on that as we possibly can.
What are the witnesses? Okay, why don't you go ahead. You raise your hand first.
She probably regret it later.
I'm Judy Crondall. I'm Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Administration. Basically, the question that I have in the bill is going to be a couple of things. Number one, it's going to be very difficult for anybody to do a fiscal audit, just in terms of estimating what the scope of this kind of thing is going to cover. Secondly, there is something in the bill which is unclear, and that is on page 1, line 25, it says the department, and in this case the department is defined as the Department of Administration. The department shall allow a claim under this chapter if, etc. Now it doesn't say the Department of Administration will pay the claim. Says the Department of Administration will allow the claim. It doesn't say who will pay the claim. There is already existing law, same title, same chapter, 4477, 040, subsection B.
Is that
which does speak to other types of claims against the state and the hearing process. And it says the department, again, Department of Administration, after the hearing may affirm, reverse, or modify its original decision. Upon acceptance by the claimant of the decision of the department, or if the claimant does not bring an action on his claim as set out in C of the section, the department, again being the Department of Administration, shall issue a warrant against the proper appropriation for the sum the department finds due the claimant. So in this one, it's saying the Department of Administration will issue the warrant, which it does for all state warrants anyway, but it will issue it against the proper appropriation, which would, which is interpreted as being the appropriation of the department where the claim originated. This one does not repeat that language. I would suggest that if the bill does become law, it should have something like that in there to make clear where the money is coming from. But again, in any situation like that, it's going to be very difficult for any department to have on hand the appropriation to pay any claims, because it will be too difficult to estimate in advance. I would assume the legislature will not want to appropriate money for claims based on speculation. And it leaves unanswered the question of where will the money come from at the time it's needed.
Any questions? Sure. my plan. Sure, it would be my plan, as long as I'm chairing the meeting, that we would not take any action on the bill. I think that's pretty obvious. We will continue to take witnesses and discuss it. Your aide is here, so we can continue working on it. Any questions? Thank you. Susan?
Assistant Attorney General from the Department of Law, and I just have a couple of areas that I think if this bill is going to become law, ought to be addressed, that I don't think were necessarily intended, that I wanted to bring to the committee's attention. At page 1, line 17, subsection B of 072 says that the chapter does not apply to attorney's fees specifically authorized by statute or rule of court. And the one area that I wanted to bring to the committee's attention is royalty audits. Under the terms of the leases that the state has with the oil companies, the companies are charged with paying for the royalty audits that are conducted. If it's a pre-administrative hearing situation, arises with respect to the correctness of the royalties that have been paid, and you can bet that there will be lawyers involved in that pre-administrative hearing dispute. The way this is written, because it's covered by the lease, but it's not covered by statute or rule of court, a question might arise that the oil companies, despite the terms of the lease, might be entitled to reimbursement. The other area that the committee might want to think about is in the area of contracts, particularly construction contracts that the state has. I am not terribly aware of what's in those, but I know that construction contracts very typically will include provisions for arbitration of disputes, which is pre-administrative hearing, and may themselves have provisions allocating costs between the parties with respect to arbitration or some other informal dispute resolution procedure. And I don't think this bill is intended, as in the case of a like a contract, to take precedence over contractual provisions between the state and other parties. There's one other area, and I don't know whether the committee wants.
Do you have any recommended language for it?
Well, I think you could say, which is specifically a claim for attorney's fees or other expenses specifically authorized by statute, rule of court, lease, contract, or agreement between the state and the parties.
Okay, certainly
the Constitution would not allow us to do that retroactively anyway, is that right? Would that interfere with the contract
and
lease that's already in existence?
Although,
certainly we want to deal with it.
Yeah, although it doesn't really impair the private part. The state does not have a right under the Constitution with respect to the impairment of its contract, as I understand it. And this would impair the state's contract, not the private party's
contract. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. One other area, and this isn't so much a legal question, it's a policy question for the committee to think about. And I'm thinking in particular about tax matters. A lot of disputes arise between the Department of Revenue and fairly large corporations that employ house counsel. They're on salary. This isn't an extraordinary expense that the taxpayer suddenly has to pay because of a contract with the state. I don't have any suggestions about that, but I think it's something that the committee might want to think about as to whether this is a sort of catastrophic remedy or a remedy, you know, for catastrophic expenses where an individual gets up against the state has a problem, the state, it turns out that the state's wrong, and they suddenly have several thousand dollars worth of attorney's fees to pay. I simply point that out to you as something that you might want to think about. Finally, I understand that the Department of Administration is authorized to adopt regulations to deal with the claims procedure, and I assume that those regulations would have provisions governing what constitutes a resolution in his favor. The courts have had to deal with this problem as to who in fact is the prevailing party, so there's a little bit of guidance, but it's a very different ball game in a lot of situations when you're talking about a case that comes into court. The issues tend to become crystallized and tend to become much more narrow by the time the case gets to court. It might be more difficult. I simply give you an example. The Department of Revenue issues a tax assessment. And say it's even a corporation, a big corporation, and the assessment is you have to pay us an additional $100,000 in tax, and the corporation comes in and provides additional documentation and so forth and so on. And there are 12 areas in which deductions and credits and so forth are in dispute, and the taxpayer loses as to 11 of those, and those 11 amount to $95,000 worth of the $100,000. One involves $5,000, and that's resolved in the taxpayer's favor at the informal hearing level. How do you deal with those? Is that, and you could even I could give you a hypothetical that was even more extreme, where the taxpayer had a $100,000 additional tax assessment and walked out having to pay $99,999 in tax. Winning a dollar, where do you draw the line in those situations? You might want to provide more guidance to the Department of Administration for their regulation adoption in terms of what constitutes a resolution in the individual's favor.
Of course, there's a similar phrase in the court rules about prevailing parties, and we're getting a developing body of court law on what prevailing party means in those situations. Do you think that might help?
I think it helps, but as I say, I think we may be talking about, and it's hard for me even to envision all of the kinds of things that might come up under a bill like this, because it seems to cover, as has been suggested earlier, almost every kind of situation where individuals get head to head with the government. But I think that once a case gets to court, you do tend to have the issues narrowed and crystallized so that it is easier to tell who wins and who loses. Those are just things I wanted to bring to your attention.
Any questions?
Sorry to be late.
All right.
Okay. Bill passing interest.
Passing interest.
Pass indication how many interest.
For the record, Representative Miller has joined. Go ahead.
I'm Dana Klein, and I work for the Department of Revenue. And I believe most of you have our memo, and I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. We misinterpreted a couple of things about the bill. Number one, realize that it is strictly informal, not formal, and litigation as far as hearings go that are being considered here. We still stand by our feeling that after the permanent fund dividend law goes into effect, we would have about 850 informal hearings a year. The other misconception occurred as far as our estimate of $84,000 a year as far as costs go. Basically, when Gary took an average of about $2,500 And we also wanted to point out that most of the people who do end up hiring attorneys are your larger corporations and the informal.
Would you agree this thing at the most cost about $2.5 million?
If 600.
If you, eight fifty.
Gary, how many out of your 600 informal hearings are there?
Maybe 20%. Most of these are people who design these so people can represent themselves, right? You know, if I go to people and say, hey, at the informal stage, come in and present your case. And, you know, and they obviously have the right to bring an attorney in, bring an accountant, whatever. But the majority of them, unless it's a complex issue, but it's, you know, a pretty basic thing, and they will come in and represent themselves and explain their case. My conference staff will attempt to resolve it at that point in time if they can.
What did you introduce yourself to the record?
For the record, I'm Gary Jenkins, Director of Dallas Division.
Is it important to you?
Well, I just wanted to state that that's probably the worst possible scenario. That's the assumption I went under.
And as Susan pointed out, particularly with tax cases, there are a lot of matters, a lot of decisions that are made where they win one section and lose another.
That's not the worst possible scenario?
Well, just considering the Department of Revenue, which you've got 15 other states that you can.
Yeah, but just for the Department of Revenue, $2.5 million.
Any other questions? Any other witnesses? Representative Chuckwork.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't feel really too comfortable with this legislation. There's a room for people to abuse it, I think, of its privilege. I know, maybe I'm saying it around the cases, so I may move later. I notice in our system back home that legal service is a good thing to have when people use it legitimately. But when it starts to, when people begin to abuse it, and for every little matter to run against their screaming wolf, not accomplishing anything. It has an effect on our social life for people, among other things. And, nowadays, people are scared of each other. As a result, I don't know what this would do, but perhaps. Unclear language, and perhaps we may have the same repercussions.
I have, as you can tell, I had a bill drafted earlier in the session, which I never filed, which addressed roughly the same problem, I think, that Representative Malone perceived. Mine was much more limited. Not filed this. I'm not necessarily pushing it. I didn't file it because there were still some technical problems with it. But what it does is provide for a payment of a reasonable attorney's fees by a prevailing party in formal administrative proceedings under the Public Utilities Commission, under the Alaska Transportation Commission, and any other formal adjudicatory proceeding under the Administrative Procedures Act. And there's a list of agencies in the law use that act, and it's a pretty long list, but it is not every agency of the state, and it's only those who do go through a process that most of the time, much of the time, does require legal assistance. And it's not the type of process we've heard about here where someone tries to set up a proceeding and the person can represent themselves. We're talking about a formal administrative proceeding of some sort, which results in a penalty or that bill, like I say, I never filed, but it would address what I perceived to be a problem in those administrative agencies once they got to a formal proceeding. I think I'd throw it out to the group as another alternative. It may well be that, I don't
throw that out as an option. Public Utility Commission, Transportation Commission, any other formal adjudicatory proceeding under the Administrative Procedures Act.
Well, you know, I realize this bill probably has some technical problems and stuff, but I tend to agree with Pat. You know, and I think it's good, you know, for Malone to go ahead and introduce this bill talked about. But I think personally, in probably more cases than none, is intimidated by this huge bureaucracy. And it's, you know, for all we know, that person may be right. And, you know, the purpose of all the public service, including myself, to make sure that justice is served, you know, for the people here. And, you know, to pursue all possible avenues to make sure that that person or person's problems are resolved. I think that, I agree with Pat. I think a person can be intimidated by this huge bureaucracy, office, personnel,
Mr. Chairman, if I can just make one point, having dealt with a lot of the bureaucracy that you're talking about from a legal perspective, and that is that a lot of the bureaucrats that you're talking about, although they may intimidate individuals, they themselves are intimidated by lawyer calls, and they may be backing down on good state simply because a lawyer calls and screams at them. And that may not be something that you want to have happen either. I'd like to throw that out as an idea. The other thing that could happen is when we get involved, if the bureaucrat recognizes that they're being intimidated, our office gets called, and then everybody ends up spending a huge amount of money because suddenly lawyers are involved. This problem that we ought to be 100 miles away from, we don't need it. We throw that out as a thought.
Mr. Chairman, usually the people that are wrong, in my view, are usually the ones that try to hire an attorney to find a loophole.
Representative Phillips indicated that people are intimidated by government. I think probably sometimes they are, but people are also intimidated by other people. And if there's any logic to the idea that we have to protect these people from the government, then why don't we have an amendment to this thing that also provides reimbursement for people who incur legal debts as a result of dealings with other people? Because the government, after all, is representative of the people and that sort of thing. So one should follow the other if we're going to do something like this. And I don't necessarily agree we should do either, but I just throw that out for what it's worth.
It would be my intention to adjourn the meeting if there's no further discussion.
I just don't want to cut anything off. No, I don't want to cut it off. I just want to bring up. Let's say a person does go through all this. He found that he was right in his point. He's out of expenses. He's out of all the mental anguish that he's got to go through. And frankly, I don't think that's fair. I've seen it happen myself. And maybe I'm speaking too much from a pro-business point of view. But, you know, some people can do without it.
I really don't want to cut off any discussion, but on the other hand, it seems like we have pretty well exhausted it. There's no intent to take any action on it today. If there is no objection, we'll adjourn. Get a little work done.
Lawyers don't scream, dude.
Not on this one, they won't.
Yeah, they'll like it.
I know several of them.
He's the case, they will.
only when we're telling people that we don't scream. We don't scream.
Yeah, is this? you know if this is a result of a constituent thing or?